Today is Wednesday, December 9th, and you are listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Coming up, the United Nations human rights chief says the Ethiopia-Tigray conflict is spiraling out of control.
We have corroborated information of gross human rights violation abuses, including indiscriminate attacks against civilians and civilian objects, looting, abductions, and sexual violence against women and girls.
Also ahead, VOA's acting director steps down. Plus, what will U.S. relations with the U.N. look like under President-elect Joe Biden? These stories and more are next. Our top story today is COVID-19, as the world anticipates the approval and distribution of vaccines following the beginning of mass inoculations in the U.K. yesterday. Deaths are on the rise. In Germany, leader Angela Merkel urged stricter measures to fight the virus as 570 people died in Germany in the last 24 hours, a record for that country. Indonesia also hit its daily record with 170 dead from the virus. The U.S. is the site of the world's largest outbreak, and the country has suffered its deadliest stretch since April, with an average of 2,234 people dying each day over the last week. Average U.S. cases have hit record highs this week with over 201,000 new infections each day. Along with the pandemic's health toll in America, the economic cost is mounting. As many people stay home to avoid infection, workers in the world's largest economy are struggling with job losses, business closures, and evictions. But Congress is struggling to pass economic relief. For the latest on lawmakers' negotiations, I reached out to VOA congressional correspondent Catherine Gibson here in Washington. Catherine, can you give us the latest on negotiations for COVID relief here in the U.S.?
Right. So after months of negotiations to get a second massive round of coronavirus aid out the door, lawmakers are running out of time. They have only a few days left in session in the month of December before they all head home for the holidays, before the new Congress is sworn in early next January. So they're really facing a tight deadline to hammer out their differences, which have really, they've struggled to reach some common ground these past few months. They're trying to find some new ways. Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell on Tuesday said that he was willing to give up his red line negotiating item, this liability protections for businesses that would protect them from lawsuits if they bring people back in and they get infected with the coronavirus. But congressional Democrats came back and said, well, that's fine that you're giving up your red line, but we're not going to give up our red line, which is additional funding for state and local governments to keep emergency workers employed. Chuck Schumer said that Mitch McConnell was pulling the rug out from under those emergency workers by not offering them more aid. And then, of course, the White House put forward their own proposal last night. So we have a lot of numbers floating around. We have a lot of negotiating points. And right now it looks like we're not any closer to getting a deal.
And let's put things in perspective here. The U.S. is suffering its worst economic downturn this year, 2020, since the Great Depression of the 1930s. Literally millions of people have lost their jobs. There are reports of evictions as people cannot pay rent. So many businesses have closed. I mean, it's very clear that the American people need relief, need economic relief. So why has Congress just been unable to accomplish this and agree on relief that the American people really desperately need?
Well, I think it really speaks to the partisan politics on Capitol Hill, where there's not really an incentive for either side to give in to the other. And of course, for most of these negotiations, we also had an election season going. All of the House was campaigning back in their home districts. A portion of the Senate was up for re-election. We, of course, had a very intense election battle between President Trump and now President-elect Biden. So there really wasn't a lot of incentive for the sides to come together and compromise with each other. But we've got to look at what's going to happen if they don't. 12 million Americans are going to lose their unemployment insurance. An estimated 40 million people will lose protections if those eviction moratoriums expire as they would if the Congress doesn't reach a deal. We're talking about a significant portion of the American population who is really looking at this legislation for economic help.
And so what happens next? As you said, there's really only a few days remaining for some kind of deal to be reached.
That's right. So Congress is buying themselves another week to negotiate this. Really, their hard stop deadline is pretty much going to be December 18th. That's what they hope is going to be their last week in session. And they're buying themselves time by extending the deadline for government funding, which was set to expire this Friday, December 11th. They're hoping that if they can negotiate a government funding deal, they're going to add on the negotiated coronavirus aid deal and roll all of that into one massive package that they can spend before leaving town for the holidays. That's the best case scenario of what will happen in these next few days.
That's VOA's congressional correspondent, Catherine Gibson. Catherine, thank you so much for joining us.
You're so welcome.
People aboard a Royal Caribbean cruise to nowhere from Singapore were told to stay in their cabins Wednesday after a COVID-19 case was detected on board, forcing the Quantum of the Seas ship back to port. Libby Hogan of Reuters reports.
One of those so-called cruises to nowhere, a much-hyped cruise trip with no destination port to keep with travel restrictions, has apparently backfired, because a COVID-19 case was found aboard one from Royal Caribbean and has now forced nearly 1,700 passengers into isolation. The cruise, which was only open to Singapore residents, was meant to be sailing just off the city state and planned no stops. Now the Quantum of the Sea ship has been forced back to port, authorities said. All passengers had cleared a mandatory test for the virus up to 3 days before the cruise started on Monday. But an infected passenger, an 83-year-old male, had reported to the onboard medical center with diarrhea, and passengers were told of the infection early on Wednesday. One passenger, Melvin Chu, described his shock hearing of the infection.
And given all these precautionary measures, it is quite uncanny or bizarre to actually find out that there actually is COVID patient on board.
Royal Caribbean and the Singapore Tourism Board said all guests and crew of the ship who had close contact with the infected guest had subsequently tested negative for the virus. The passengers and crew will stay on board in their rooms until contact tracing is complete. Then they will undergo mandatory COVID-19 testing before leaving the terminal. Singapore, which has had just over 58,000 cases and 29 deaths, has been reporting less than a handful of local infections in recent weeks.
Thanks to Libby Hogan of Reuters for that report. The UN High Commissioner for Human Rights, Michelle Bachelet, warns that fighting in Ethiopia's northern Tigray region is spiraling out of control and is having an appalling impact on civilians who are without aid and protection. But Ethiopia's government is rejecting calls for independent investigations into the deadly conflict, saying it, quote, doesn't need a babysitter, end quote. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
Despite Ethiopian government claims to the contrary, High Commissioner Bachelet says fighting continues between Ethiopian armed forces and the Tigray People's Liberation Front, as well as affiliated militia on both sides. She says human rights monitors and aid agencies are unable to access this volatile area. That means they are unable to fully verify disturbing allegations of violations against civilians caught in this chaotic situation. However, she believes the information her office has received to be credible.
We have corroborated information of gross human rights violation abuses, including indiscriminate attacks against civilians and civilian objects, looting, abductions, and sexual violence against women and girls. We have also reported forced recruitment of Tigrayan youth to fight against their own communities.
The High Commissioner says there's an urgent need for independent monitoring of the situation in Tigray. She's calling on the government to grant access to the region to ensure protection for the civilian population and to bring those responsible for abuse to account. Bachelet notes the humanitarian situation in the region also is distressing. She is appealing to the government to implement an agreement with the UN to grant aid agencies unimpeded access to civilians in desperate need of assistance. Elsewhere in Ethiopia, Rights Chief Bachelet says there are numerous reports of ethnic profiling of Tigrayans. She says Tigrayans reportedly have been dismissed from jobs in the civil service, journalists are harassed, and hate speech directed against people of Tigrayan origin is growing.
I think that such discriminatory actions are deeply unjust, but are also fostering divisiveness and sowing the seeds for further instability and conflict. So I urge the government to take immediate measures to halt such discrimination.
Bachelet expresses concern about a reported rise in intercommunal violence in recent weeks in other parts of Ethiopia. She says fighting, which has flared up in Amhara, Benishangwe Gumuz, Somali, Afar, and Oromia regions, reportedly has resulted in fatalities. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
This is VOA. The Voice of America's acting director has stepped down, saying he is returning to his previous position within the network. Eliz Bibaraj was named VOA's acting director in June. He sent an email to staff late Tuesday saying that his time in the position is coming to an end. He said that Michael Pack, who is CEO of VOA's parent agency, called the U.S. Agency for Global Media, or USAGM, is bringing in a new leader for VOA. U.S. President Donald Trump appointed Pack as CEO of USAGM, and he assumed his position 6 months ago. Last month, a federal judge ruled that some of Pack's moves as CEO violated the free speech rights of USAGM journalists, including VOA reporters. The judge ordered Pack to stop interfering in VOA's news coverage and conducting editorial investigations. However, Pack retains the authority to select a new VOA director. In his email to staff, Bibaraj said the last 6 months have been the most challenging period in VOA's recent history. He wrote that, quote, some agency officials failed to respect rules, protocols, and processes that I considered inviolable, end quote. He also said, quote, attempts to trample VOA's journalistic independence threatens to undermine our hard-won credibility, end quote, without elaborating. Pack announced that Robert R. Riley will be the new director of Voice of America.
In a minute.
It's thought that Earth's atmosphere is composed of mostly nitrogen, some oxygen, a little bit of argon, and carbon dioxide, as well as tiny amounts of other gases and water vapor. Scientists from Switzerland's University of Bern and the University of Geneva found vaporized metals in the atmosphere of an exoplanet called WASP 121b. After studying data collected by the HARPS spectrograph on the European Southern Observatory's La Silla telescope, the scientists detected gases containing vanadium, iron, chromium, calcium, sodium, magnesium, and nickel in WASP 121b's atmosphere. These vaporized metals are thought to be the result of the incredibly hot temperatures of the exoplanet. Earlier calculations indicated that the planet's upper atmosphere temperature can reach over 2,500 degrees Celsius. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
You're listening to International Edition on The Voice of America. I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Australian police arrested on Wednesday an 18-year-old man who had allegedly expressed interest in committing a mass casualty attack motivated by right-wing ideology. The arrest comes one day after New Zealand released results of an inquiry into last year's Christchurch mosque massacre, which was committed by a right-wing extremist from Australia. Emma McCarthy of Reuters reports.
Australian police arrested an 18-year-old man on Wednesday after he allegedly expressed interest in committing a mass attack motivated by right-wing ideology. Police said they expected to lay charges on Wednesday against the man from Albury, a town 344 miles southwest of Sydney. Australian Federal Police Assistant Commissioner Scott Lee.
Accessing extreme right-wing material, and that has also included bomb-making materials, which he has sought to provide to others as part of his activities to urge others to commit terrorist acts and violence against community members. A couple of days ago, what we observed was an escalation in the tone, which went to a support of a mass casualty event and potentially his involvement in that event.
Australia has been on heightened alert against the threat of homegrown radicals after several lone wolf attacks in recent years. A white supremacist gunman from Australia killed 51 Muslim worshippers in New Zealand last year, and intelligence agencies have regularly warned of an increased threat by right-wing aligned individuals since then.
That was Emma McCarthy of Reuters. Human rights abusers will face asset freezes and travel bans under new legislation adopted by the European Union. The so-called Magnitsky laws will target those involved in crimes ranging from genocide to torture and arbitrary detentions. Henry Ridgewell reports from London.
The casinos of Cannes, the marinas of the Mediterranean, the boutiques of Paris and Milan, favoured destinations for the super rich to invest their money. And soon they could be off limits to corrupt officials and oligarchs accused of human rights abuses. The European Union officially signs off on so-called Magnitsky Act laws on December 10th, World Human Rights Day. It allows the EU to impose travel bans and asset freezes on human rights abusers. Financier Bill Browder, who has campaigned for similar legislation in countries around the world, says getting Europe on board is a major milestone.
Countries that dictators and kleptocrats like to visit, like they go to the south of France, they go to Sardinia, they go to Spain. So there's something there that they really covet. And so if these laws, if the EU Magnitsky Act actually is implemented and implemented widely, I think it could have a dramatic impact on the behavior of human rights violators around the world.
The United States, Britain, and Canada already have Magnitsky laws. They are named after Bill Browder's lawyer, Sergei Magnitsky, who died in a Russian jail in 2009 after uncovering a $230 million tax fraud by state officials. However, the EU Act will not bear Magnitsky's name, as the Dutch government argued that no one country should feel targeted. Russia's main opposition leader, Alexei Navalny, who was poisoned earlier this year but survived, spoke to EU lawmakers via a video link.
The main question we should ask ourselves, why these people poisoning, killing and fabricating election? And the answer is very, very simple, money. So European Union should target the money. And Russian oligarchs, not just old oligarchs, but also new ones, like this circle of Mr. Putin, they must be real targets of sanction.
Russian President Vladimir Putin denies involvement in Navalny's poisoning from a nerve agent. In addition to those responsible for the killing of Sergei Magnitsky himself, there are numerous obvious targets for Europe's new Magnitsky laws, says Browder.
The killers of Jamal Khashoggi, the 19 Saudis plus Mohammed bin Salman should be added to this list. The Chinese officials involved in the Uyghur genocide, the Chinese officials involved in the Hong Kong repression, the Lukashenko regime, the Burmese officials involved in the Rohingya genocide, just to name a few.
Critics say it is still possible for individual EU member states to veto any measures proposed under the new law, and countries with warmer ties to the Kremlin, such as Hungary and Cyprus, could block any sanctions. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson heads to Brussels today for talks with European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen in a push to secure a trade deal and avoid a turbulent Brexit breakup in 3 weeks. There are growing fears of a chaotic no-deal finale to the five-year Brexit crisis, when the UK finally leaves the European Union's orbit on December 31st. Tonight's dinner meeting is cast as a chance to unlock the stalled trade talks. A British government source told Reuters that a deal may not be possible. The EU's chief Brexit negotiator, Michael Barnier, says the same. The main sticking points have been over fishing rights in British waters, ensuring fair competition for companies on either side, and ways to solve future disputes. After 4 years of President Donald Trump's America First policies, President-elect Joe Biden says his administration will reassert the nation's historic role as a global leader. VOA correspondent Margaret Bashir tells us that expectations at the United Nations are high that the U.S. will re-engage at the world body.
When he introduced his top national security and foreign policy officials last month, President-elect Joe Biden said they reflect that America is back.
Ready to lead the world, not retreat from it. Once again, sit at the head of the table. Ready to confront our adversaries and not reject our allies. Ready to stand up for our values.
At the United Nations, the Trump administration has slashed hundreds of millions of dollars in funding to programs, including peacekeeping missions, Palestinian refugees, and for women's reproductive health. It pulled out of UN agencies like the World Health Organization and quit a major accord on climate action. Biden could win some international goodwill by quickly undoing some of Trump's policies. Richard Gowan, UN director at the International Crisis Group, says UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres will likely have more latitude with the new US administration.
I think we're going to see Guterres laying out some pretty ambitious plans in the year ahead on how to fight climate change and how to fight inequality, because in a sense he's liberated to promote ambitious ideas for international cooperation after a period in which he had to be enormously cautious to avoid offending Trump.
Biden's nominee to be UN ambassador and member of his cabinet is career diplomat Linda Thomas-Greenfield.
America is back. Multilateralism is back. Diplomacy is back.
South African Ambassador Jerry Mattia and other diplomats have publicly and privately welcomed her nomination.
We think that she'll bring to bear her vast experience, over three decades of diplomacy. And that's what we need it now. Now we need a diplomatic skills maturity and knowing that we have a common cause, all of us.
Randa Slim, senior fellow at the Middle East Institute, says whether to rejoin the Iran nuclear deal will quickly test the new administration.
The president-elect recognizes that this is going to be a tough road ahead. If Iran were to enter into strict compliance with the 2015 deal, then the U.S. will rejoin the deal, but only as the beginning of follow-on negotiations, and that's where the difficulties are going to come.
At the United Nations, China moved to expand its influence as the Trump administration pulled back, says Richard Gowan of International Crisis Group.
Biden, I think, will want to limit Chinese influence, but does know that in some ways it's necessary to work with Beijing.
Both allies and adversaries are eager to see how Biden and his UN envoy will translate this new U.S. leadership at the United Nations. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, New York.
That was Margaret Bashir in New York, and that's it for our show today. On behalf of our producer, Nadia Taha, and our editor, Keith Wallace, I'm Jason Patinkin in Washington. Thank you so much for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy, and have a great evening.
In the news, moderator Shana Estulin and a panel of prominent Washington journalists as they deliberate the latest top stories of the week, including the U.S. leads the world in total cases and deaths of the coronavirus, according to Johns Hopkins University. Don't miss Issues in the News this Saturday and Sunday on The Voice of America.
Hi, this is Victor Beatty, managing editor of VOA News. Tune in to the Voice of America's newscasts every hour on the top of each hour, 24/7. Listen to our news and correspondent reports from around the world. VOA is your trusted source for news.